The following presentation was recorded at the 2012 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
If you need a handout, just ask Mark. He has extra copies there. Maybe while people are coming in, I'll say a few things about my background. I'm from Plain City, Ohio. We have a community school there. Plainview Christian School was started in 1947, and is still going today. I taught grades 5, 6, and 7 the first year of my teaching experience. And then I taught grades 8, 9, and 10, and also was principal. And then in the 1990s sometime, we added full high school, and I've been teaching there since. I'm part-time right now, just teach classes on Tuesday and Thursday mornings this year. And, of course, I'm no longer principal either. What I share is from my perspective, and I'm not trying to promote our own way of doing necessarily. It's just what I'm experienced with, so that's obviously why I'll be sharing things from our school and community. Keeping open communication between school and supporting churches, I feel this is a very important subject. And one that I have seen a lot of success in the board's attempts to do that, and one that is very important. Amos wrote in Amos 3:3, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" Obviously, that's a rhetorical question. The answer is no. At least that's what I would conclude from there. And that's important in school. And as we look at the various kinds of schools and the various needs of the school, this remains an important aspect. I think we'll go right into the outline here. This is kind of a sketchy outline, and I, having taught grammar, I used sentence outlines. At first I had a mixture, but then I remembered some of my fellow teachers who are very sticky about an outline should either be a sentence outline or a topic outline. So some of these sound a bit stilted, but anyway, so it goes. Some of our schools are church schools, and I've never had any experience in a church school. I assume a church school would be a school that is actually operated by a church, just one church. And we have a fellow Mennonite school in the area that is a church school. In fact, they made that school an arm of the church in an attempt to avoid some legal problems. So for a while, they were able to get by without having to have their water tested, for instance. But that had a limited value. But there are values in a church school, and some of the struggles that we go through occasionally would be easier to deal with if it were a church school. In a church school, you can have the church be sort of the umbrella, and you don't have to deal with so many questions, which the church policies and standards would address beforehand. And you're more likely to have a more homogeneous body of patrons. And by the way, before I forget it, I tend to rattle on, and I would welcome comments. And if you have anything to bring up at any time, a question, something that isn't clear, or some additional information, I'd invite you to just raise your hand and speak up. In our own experience, well, I'll wait till we get to the community school part about that. Many church schools have people other than their church members who are interested in sending to their school. And I'm familiar with several of cases like that. And so you're going to have a policy about that. The same question arises with a patron school as well, a community school. But in a church school where you expect the children to be, the students to be from your, the children of the families, then the non-church patrons, non-member patrons, will have to be, that question, how do you handle that? Are they going to be able to vote on any issues? If so, which? Are they going to be able to serve on any responsibilities? So that has to be addressed. In a church school, typically, I think the non-member patrons have a limited involvement as far as responsibilities in most of the situations I'm familiar with. If you have a situation that's unusual, why, I'd be happy to hear from it. However, in the church school does not solve all the differences that arise in a school. And as you probably are aware, unless it's very different from Plain City, you have, within any given congregation, you have certain kinds of things happening, differences of opinion, you have personality issues that arise, you have different convictions even sometimes. And so that does not solve all the questions that will come up in the school, just because it's a church school. Granted, it does make it, it does simplify it. But there is variation. I think of, sometimes we call it church politics. And I think of some of the things that have happened in various congregations that I'm familiar with, some unfortunate things and some ways in which they developed into, well, just to be honest with you, I think sometimes when there are differences among fellow Christians, if the main issue cannot be resolved, it results in other issues being dragged in. And if Jim is going to stand for this, I'll oppose it. And that can kind of create a nasty situation. So that's that can spill over into school, and does. Some of our schools are community schools, and I speak from a perspective of a community school. When Plain City was, when the Plainview School was founded in 1947, it was a mixed group. We had about two-thirds of the patrons, Old Order Amish, and about one-third conservative conference. And then a few Beachy Church wasn't very largely represented. And we had there was a crisis in the public school, not in the public school, but as a result of some policies that were changing. Films were being introduced at the local school. The elementary school superintendent was a strong-willed person, and he didn't sympathize very much with the Amish theology, especially. So attendance at the film, educational films, was compulsory. And this galvanized the support for building our own school. There were a few men who had a vision. One of them was an Amishman named Jonas Gingrich Jr., and he was the main spark plug of the movement to build our own school. Another man was the pastor at the United Bethel Church, which was a conservative church, Andrew Farmold. And a third one, I would say, would be Joe Miller, Sr. He was an Amish preacher, one-armed Joe. Maybe some of you have heard of him. He sold the land for the site of the building, for $1, so that speaks of his support. Jonas and Andrew Farmold, Jonas Gingrich and Andrew Farmold, were the board members were on the board. I think Andrew was the chairman. But the and I think as I look back, I see the cooperation among these various groups as being very good. I do not remember I was in the fifth grade when the school opened. I do not remember at any time that there was any indication of looking down at one group or the other among the students. And if it happens among the parents, it will filter down to the students. The conservative and Beachy constituents were very sensitive to the special treatment of the Amish. And so the building was built with tall windows. There was no electricity, no telephone, no running water, no toilets. We had outhouses and we had a hand pump. And there was no way to call anyone if anything arose except go to the neighbor who had a phone, which happened very rarely. And the school had a bus, but it was owned by one of the conservative men who was the bus driver. And so they worked out their issues. And when the someone from the state came around to check the lighting on a cloudy day when it was actually not sufficient, they installed long rods with hooks and hung Coleman gasoline lanterns on those on days that it was cloudy. And it's very easy for anyone especially from a more liberal group, to criticize those that are more conservative. We can find all kinds of what we call inconsistencies. How do you justify? How do you justify having to have strings on your coverings? You know, some of them, but they never tie them. What are they for? And some of them just have one and loop it in the back. You know, you can make all kinds of criticisms like that. On the other hand, if you are open, you might find a spokesman from that group who will explain why they require that. You can find support for almost anything if you dig long enough. It's more of a challenge to formulate policy for a community school. Now, in our experience, the Constitution specified that to be a patron of the school with voting rights, you need to be a member of an Amish or Mennonite church in good standing. Today, that's a little different. Back then, that was sufficient, probably. They also had a few dress standards. Slacks for girls were forbidden, cut hair, and there might have been a few, very few. But there was mention made in the Constitution that all the students, parents, and everybody was to respect the other group's standards, and they were expected to abide by their own personal congregation standards. Membership qualifications need to be clearly defined. Today, if we were starting from scratch, we might not open the school, a community school, up to any Mennonite group because of what has happened between 1947 and this year. We don't have any. We have mainstream Mennonite groups in the area. We have Ohio Conference congregations and Conservative Conference congregations. None of them are patronizing our school. Today, the school constituency is made up of either Beachy or BMA churches. There are four congregations basically represented. And I don't know, let me see. I think we have board members from all of those groups. In the beginning, the Constitution stipulated that the board shall be, two-thirds of the board shall be Amish. And at the time the school was begun, when the Constitution was adopted, there's at least one person who pushed very hard that the Constitution should state that two-thirds of the two-thirds of the board should be Old Order Amish, should always be Old Order Amish. Well, unfortunately, that became an issue because within probably 15 years of the school's founding, there was such a shift in the community. The Amish were either dying out or moving away, and so many people were transferring membership that the board, which had been elected two-thirds Amish, no longer was because of a change of affiliation. And so this caused a problem because, first of all, the school was operating within the bounds of the Constitution. And so there was an attempt made for a constitutional amendment. But the constitutional amendment would need a two-thirds majority to be approved, and they couldn't get that because of the number of Amish that still remained. For several years, it was quite a problem. In fact, some of the Amish withdrew and began and formed their own school for a number of years. And eventually, the tide turned where they were able to pass a constitutional amendment. Now, that's one thing about any school, when you draw up a policy or a constitution, it might work for the present situation, but there's so much fluctuation and so much change that the school leaders need to be sensitive to that and address issues as they come up. We can never compile a policy that will take us the next 100 years. I don't think so. Depends on what our goals are, I suppose. In most theological matters, we are on the same page, and that's true if you look at the overall picture. We have the various Mennonite groups in our community basically still adhere to non-resistance and at least give lip service to non-conformity or being separated from the world. The definition has changed quite a bit in some cases. And we believe in assurance of salvation. We're not Calvinistic. And so in those more deep issues, we are on the same page. And there's a sense in which it is safer to have one congregation have its own school. But there's also a sense in which there's a value in being able to work together. And I think among our circles, there's a lot of there are a lot of flavors in our various groups, if you know what I mean. But I think it's a healthy move for us to be able to work together in areas like CAM, for instance. And I'm blessed when I see that. It's a little different with a school, because in a school you have impressionable minds will be influenced by their peers. I know that. And depending on, and that's one thing that church school leaders need to be sensitive to, because, well, we talk about peer pressure, and that's a term I don't like to use, because as soon as you address that, the peers will object and say, I'm not under any pressure. And they're partly right, and so a better term might be peer influence, because they can't deny being influenced. So now, there may need to be some minimum requirements. Well, that's not very strongly worded. Actually, there have to be minimum requirements. And there has to be a mentality that we will not permit the school to go to the lowest common denominator of all the patrons that attend there. And children, if they are taught, usually do very well in respecting each other's differences. But if you have an attitude in the home, it will filter through. And I have seen cases where, let's say a family had a problem with a teacher. They will come to the board or the principal and say, you know, now we never talk about this to our children. And I don't know if I've ever said this, but I am tempted to say, you don't have to. You can take all the safeguards you want to keep that attitude hidden. It will come through. You might as well assume that. And so we really need to deal with the heart of the issue. And our boards through the years have been very good at that. We have had questions come up. Well, for instance, a question about going to a full high school. It was controversial at the time. And the board was very hesitant to push. And there were people agitating on the one side and on the other. And they took their time. They went slowly. They went and talked with people. They addressed their concerns. And I don't remember ever hearing in a board meeting, I attended board meetings for years as principal, hearing them ridicule even some of the more extreme positions in either way. One thing that we've had a number of non-Anabaptist students in our school. One situation was where churches sponsored people from Ukraine to come over and then furnished, put them into school there. And we've had a Baptist family that attended. They wanted to attend our school. And usually, and we've had a lot of inquiries because Columbus, Ohio is just next door, and there's a large interest in Christian schools. There's a lot of mobility in this country. People move from one place to the other because of jobs. They go to the Yellow Pages and they look for a Christian school. And we've had a lot of inquiries from that. And we're not really interested. We get calls from the telephone book publishers. They want to put a big ad in, you know, promote your school. Well, we tell them we're not really interested in, you know, appealing to the general public. So we don't do that. But they still find us and they call. And usually I tell them that we're not eager. I tell them that, you know, we welcome people, Christians, who can share our goals. And I tell them up front, we're Mennonite, we're not accredited. And usually by that time, they're ready to hang up. But I don't want to discourage them. But there are people who are interested. And I tell them, your best course of action would be to just come and visit the school. I'd be glad to take you through the school and show you what we're doing. And from that, we've had people who were interested. We had one couple that was going to move into the community. And then we discovered that they were divorced and remarried. And they asked about that. And we told them, I told them, that there's no place in our curriculum that I know that it's specifically addressed. But all of us who are in the school here do not believe that's right. We don't condone remarriage after divorce. And so if we're not going to tell you you can't send your children here, but if the question ever comes up, we would not bend on that issue. And they chose not to attend. Another thing I usually told the student, inquiring people, is that we do not welcome families in which the children are exposed to television. Now, that has to be worded carefully because we've had some run-ins about that in our own community. For instance, Exhibit A, a family whose children probably weren't disciplined as much as some of us would, and some of the older children who were out of school were staying at home, had a little portable television upstairs, and some of the school-aged children watched it. So you have some situations like that are touchy, and that was addressed, and well, I won't go into detail. Many of those people who are actually serious about attending a fairly conservative school are easier to work with than some of our own people. I'll give you an example. I don't know how many things like this I would share, but here's one example. What I was responsible for, I always tried to make sure the children are carrying out the wishes of their parents. Because if you have gray areas, and the children hide clothes and take them, sneak them along to school and wear them at school and hide them again when they go home. That kind of thing can happen. It's not good. Regardless whether my personal feelings are one way or the other, there was a case where some of the boys were wearing bill caps on the ball diamond, and I knew that their church did not sanction that. So the father was running a van. We had needed a van besides the school buses, and so one evening I just went out and I asked him if he's aware of that his boys were wearing bill caps at school in the ball diamond. And I don't know what, maybe I said it in an unkind way, but he just really reacted to that, and felt kind of defeated. It wasn't because I personally was opposed to wearing the bill cap. It was simply the fact that I didn't know if they were aware of it, and I assumed they would want to follow the policy of their church. So those are some things you get into. What is the role of the board? Well, the board needs to take the leadership in promoting unity and sensitivity. And I've seen some very, very good examples of that, where a board member will go talk to a parent. And the board member, there's an issue here that the school has decided to draw the line here. And the board member doesn't really feel that would have to be done there. He's sort of sympathetic with the fact that might be unnecessary. But because of the sensitivities of others, he pleads with the member who is in discord with it, he pleads with him to be sensitive to that other. That can be a ticklish situation. And it doesn't work to just take an official position. You have to the board member needs to enter into that himself and be sensitive. Like I said, I have seen some very good examples of that. The board needs to foster sensitivity to other groups' positions. And that can be done even in a board, in a parent-teacher's meeting, if necessary, where if somebody makes a rash remark, the presiding chairman might even, speak about being kind to others and not having to endorse their position and yet be supportive of it for the sake of unity. We can sacrifice a lot. Now, I'm not talking about convictions. But we can sacrifice a lot of convenience for the sake of brethren. And school, our school, we have about probably 120 enrolled right now. And we have enough students that we can operate on a certain level of efficiency that would be unable to be attained if we had half as many. So there's a value in being able to be sensitive to each other for the purpose of for a common purpose. And if it's important enough for us to do that, then it's going to work. The board needs to provide direction and support to the teachers. And sometimes you have a teacher that is, maybe especially if you get a teacher from another state or something, another community who's not aware of some of the special practices or things that go on, conditions in our community, and they might need to be informed about that. And support. It's awkward for teachers to enforce policies, especially if they're unpopular in certain circles. We had some years ago when, before the long skirt Fed came in, the board had made a board policy, that the skirts need to cover the knees in sitting or standing position. And that today that seems a little bit far-fetched because I haven't seen any issue there. But it's very difficult to to really address that. If you have people that are on the border, and here little Susie comes up to the door ready to go on the school bus, and Mom looks at her, well, the dress covers her knees. But when she sits down, they're up here, you know, and what are you going to do? So how do you handle? The board needs to be involved in advising the teachers. What are you going to do if there is a student who offends? And I know we had called parents and just asked them to bring a dress that is longer. And it's especially difficult, awkward for a man teacher to do that. Fortunately, in our situation, we had more than one teacher in high school, and so we could push that off on the lady teachers. But on the other hand, I'm very much aware of board members who have taken the heat and talked to parents about that issue and gotten a dressing down for being so, well, you can imagine, a dressing down for being, having their minds in the gutter because they shouldn't even notice it, you know, and stuff like that. We had, at one time, we had a policy, and some of these policies were board policies, but some of them were also suggested by the teachers and approved. And I'm not sure if you call that a board policy or not, but we had a policy that the boys could not come to school with T-shirts. A T-shirt at that time was an undergarment. And so we sort of got to the place where, by the way, there are four men teaching our school right now, and there have always, for many years, there have been more than one man. So sometimes we men get together and discuss matters. And we came up with this definition that the T-shirt, it's not a T-shirt if it has a collar and... I'm not sure was there something else or not. But you have the tab fronts, you know. And so some of those are, well, they're intended for outside wear as far as that goes. Anyway, the time came when I had repeated reminders from people that, that shirt is not really, just because it doesn't have a collar, stand-up collar, or just a crew collar, it's not really a T-shirt. And so we had to revise our position on that. There are constantly things coming up, as you are undoubtedly well aware, especially in a community school. You have constant feds coming and going. And not only the teachers, but the board has to be sensitive to that. What is going to be permitted and what is not? Why and why not? And all that kind of thing. It doesn't work to have the teachers carry that whole load. Some of the things that we've seen, one was, of course, you wouldn't be caught dead coming to school as a high school student without having a sweatshirt or something like that with an Aeropostale or something on it. Not quite that bad, but anyway, there is a lot of that. We have a policy that they are not to wear anything with a message on it, if you know what I mean, with a statement or some other message. Just the word, a name, that hasn't been outruled. But anyway, there were students who came to school with gospel messages on their shirts. And it becomes a little awkward to tell them they can't wear that, but if you explain why, and the thing is, we did not want to be in the position where we had to evaluate all the messages that came on the shirts. So most students are understanding about things like that. Some other things that have come up. Some of the girls wanted to come to school with sandals. And then you had the issue of the painted toenails. So finally, I think it was the board's decision, no sandals. No, it's not going to be a hardship to wear shoes. So that's what they're wearing. Um, What is the role of the teacher? The teacher plays a large role in this. First of all, in the board's job is going to be pretty tough if the teacher doesn't support the board's decisions and their attempts. It has to be a working together. They're a team. And it's not only the board that has responsibilities, it's a teacher as well. A teacher needs to be sensitive to what's going on, sensitive to, and quick to bring to the board any issues that look like they're going to be a threat. What do we do with this? Because if you let it get grandfathered in, it's three times as hard to deal with this situation. We have, at one time, students were wearing these, I don't know what it was, a band of some kind, I don't know why. Nobody could seem to be able to tell me what they were for, but it was just a fad. Some of those things would be more or less neutral. Personally, my personal feeling on things like that is I want to know why, what it's for, what it stands for. And I don't know, maybe I'm stepping on somebody's toes here, but I've often wondered, nobody's been ever able to tell me what is the meaning of those stars that you see on buildings, you know? If you put up a new house, you put a star there. Well, I don't see anything wrong with it, but I want to know why. What's the deal? What's the deal there? And again, the importance of being alert to what's going on in the school. And I probably, for most of the constituents of this group, our position on some of those issues, like dress and all that, are more lenient than what you would be comfortable with. And I'm not justifying that necessarily. I'm just saying that these are issues that need to be dealt with in some way or other. It's easy for the board to shift responsibility onto the teacher and just let the teacher twist in the wind, you know. But that doesn't work very well. In my school years, I remember so well in grade 6, we had a Mennonite teacher, a young lady, she's still living, by the way, who was an example of church loyalty. And I'm not sure where she actually was from, but from another community. And in devotional time one morning, she told us that now she had been to college, and she had a watch that had a black cord type band. And she said that when she bought that watch, it had a metal band. And her church did not permit metal bands, but she wasn't at home. And then she just shared how that she couldn't live with that, and she got that changed. And loyalty to your own congregation is very important for the teachers. And if the board sees teachers that are not doing that, they need to address that, because that speaks volumes. Loyalty. And as far as interaction among various groups, someone asked me one time, what will it take to unify the conservative Anabaptists? And without thinking a whole lot, I said, it will have to be love, a love for each other that goes beyond what we're seeing now, and also fierce loyalty to your home congregation. Because, and I don't know if that's on target or not, but it sort of resonated then as I thought about it later, because a lot of times our interaction with each other, various groups, ends up heading toward the lowest common denominator. And that becomes a threat to those who are more of the conservative bent. And so I don't think we can ever devise a formula for uniting all the conservative Anabaptists. It will have to be spontaneous from the bottom up, and it might come as a result of persecution eventually. I don't know. But things do come up. The cell phone, for instance, has become a hot item in recent years, and it's convenient for a student, a high school student who drives his own vehicle to school, to have a cell phone, because he might, well, we have a school phone there, but you don't want to tie that up all the time. So mom can just call Junior and tell him to run to town and get a bag of potatoes, you know. It's very convenient. But what we've done with the cell phone is that they're not permitted in the classroom. They can use the cell phone during break time, during free time, during lunchtime, but not in the classroom. They need to go out and use it, you know, privately. There's no group huddled around the phone and all that kind of stuff. And it seemed to work fairly well. So anyway, it's about time to stop. I was going to give opportunity for questions. I warned you, I tend to rattle on. So if anyone has a comment or a question, I'd be happy to accept that. Well, if not, thank you very much for your participation. I was eager to share this topic. I was eager to know, to find out what I was going to say. Well, anyway, that's a joke. Thanks a lot. You're excused.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.